Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into a topic I know a lot of you have been asking about: butterfly populations and how they're changing, especially up in Northern Europe.
Yeah.
Specifically, we've got a research article here focusing on Sweden and Finland with over a century's worth of data all the way from 1901 to 2019. Pretty impressive.
Amazing data set.
Now, I know a lot of you are probably thinking about all the doom and gloom we hear about insect decline, but get this.
Mm-hmm.
This study actually found that the total number of butterfly species in Sweden and Finland increased by a whopping 21% during that time.
Which is
pretty amazing.
A real standout finding, yeah. When you consider that many butterfly species are actually declining globally.
Exactly.
This is like a bright spot, a little bit of hope, right?
Yeah, real butterfly boom. And hold on, there's more. The average number of species found in a typical province that jumped by, get ready for it, 64%.
It's mind-boggling, really.
Right. So, first thought that pops into my head, got to be climate change, right?
Yeah.
Warmer temperatures, butterflies can spread further north.
That's the logical first guess, for sure. And to be fair, climate warming has absolutely happened in the region.
Yeah.
They've seen temperatures actually moving northward at about 3 kilometers per year.
Whoa, hold on. 3 kilometers a year.
That's twice the average for both Europe and North America.
Wow. Okay, so these butterflies are really feeling the heat then.
Oh, yeah, they're right on the front lines, you could say. But here's where things get a little, well, unexpected.
Oh, I love unexpected.
The butterfly range shifts. They don't really match up neatly with those temperature changes.
So they're not all just scooting north, following those warmer temperatures?
Not quite. Some species, like the Apatura iris, have actually expanded north way faster than you'd expect just from the temperature shifts.
Like they're sprinting ahead.
Exactly. While others, well, they've lagged behind. And then you've got some that have even moved in the opposite direction. It's like they're playing by a different set of rules.
Okay, so clearly climate change is part of the equation, but it's not the whole story. What else could be going on?
Well, picture this, right? You've got these butterflies trying to navigate a landscape that's, well, it's constantly changing.
Okay, yeah.
And Sweden and Finland, they've seen some pretty dramatic land use transformations since the early 1900s.
Right, I remember reading about that. What kind of transformations are we talking about?
Well, for starters, forest cover has actually increased, particularly in the north. But grassland cover, that's actually decreased up there,
mm-hmm.
but increased in the south.
Interesting. So it's not just a simple more trees or less trees situation.
Yeah.
It's way more nuanced than that.
Exactly. And then, of course, you can't forget about human settlements. Those have definitely expanded, especially in the southern parts of both countries.
Yeah. Urbanization. Got to factor that in.
Definitely. And the study actually found some interesting links between these land use changes and how butterflies have been colonizing new areas.
Okay. This is where it gets even more intriguing.
Right. So early on, having a lot of forest cover, that was actually linked to higher colonization rates for butterflies.
Makes sense. More forests. More places for forest-loving butterflies to thrive.
Yeah, but get this. Over time, that link actually weakened.
Really? So the forest kept expanding, but the boost for butterfly colonization sort of fizzled out.
It did. And then there's a similar trend, but kind of in reverse, happening with grasslands.
So first forests, now grasslands. Mm-hmm. What happened with them?
Early on, there wasn't a really clear relationship between grassland cover and colonization rates.
Mm.
But then later on, it seemed like more grassland actually encouraged more colonizations.
Interesting. So it's almost like there's a lag effect happening.
Yeah.
Like it takes time for those land use changes to really impact the butterfly populations.
Possibly, yeah. And then there's urbanization, which, as you might expect, well, that's been a bit of a negative influence, especially in more recent times, probably due to, you know, loss of natural habitats.
Yeah, cities tend to be a bit concrete heavy, not exactly ideal for most butterflies.
Exactly. But it's not just about where they live, you know, it's also about who they are.
Uh-huh. So we're getting into the specifics of different butterfly species and what makes them tick.
Yep. The study actually looked at all sorts of butterfly characteristics to see which ones were linked to success, you know, being able to expand their range effectively. It's almost like a butterfly expansion race, figuring out who's got the winning traits.
I love that. A butterfly expansion race. Okay, so let's talk about the contenders. I remember the article mentioned something about generalist versus specialist species.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little refresher on what those terms mean?
Sure. So a generalist, that's like the ultimate adapter in the butterfly world. They can eat a variety of different foods, live in different habitats. Think of them as the easygoing butterflies.
Easygoing butterflies, love it.
Then you've got the specialists. They're a bit more picky. They need specific types of food, very particular habitats. They need things just so.
Got it. So in this butterfly expansion race, are we seeing those easygoing generalists taking the lead? Are they kind of dominating because they can roll with all these changes?
Well, the research does suggest that species with some key characteristics, larger ranges across Europe, a broader tolerance for different temperatures, and, oh yeah, preference for forests, those guys were more likely to be successful colonizers.
So points for flexibility and being a fan of trees.
Exactly. But then there's this really intriguing finding about, well, those picky eaters, the dietary specialists.
Oh, right. I remember that threw me for a loop. They weren't supposed to be doing so well, were they?
Nope. You'd think with some of their preferred habitats shrinking, they'd be struggling. But actually, they expanded more than the generalists.
Wait, really? That seems counterintuitive. How they manage that?
It might be because, well, they had more room to expand in the first place.
Ah, so any expansion they made would seem huge compared to the generalists, who are already pretty widespread.
Exactly. It's all relative, right? And here's another surprise. Body size didn't really matter.
Big or small, it didn't affect their ability to spread out.
Not really. So it seems like those other traits, the dietary preferences, the habitat choices, those are the real drivers here. It's fascinating, right?
It is. But we're still left with this puzzle. Why are we seeing this boom in butterfly diversity in Northern Europe when globally things are, well, not so rosy? What's the secret ingredient in their success story?
To answer that, we've got to dive into the fascinating world of ecological filtering. That's where the real magic happens.
Ecological filtering, I'm all ears. Tell me more.
Okay, so picture ecological filtering like a kind of natural selection, but instead of individuals, it's happening at the community level.
Okay, I think I'm following. So it's about the whole community being shaped by these forces, not just individual butterflies adapting on their own.
Right. It's like, you know, climate change comes along, land use changes, and then you've got all these species interacting with each other.
Yeah.
And that whole mix determines which species can actually survive and thrive in a particular spot.
So it's like a giant ecological sorting hat deciding who stays and who goes.
Exactly. And this study gives us a peek into how that sorting process is working up in Northern Europe, you know, with all those dramatic changes happening.
Right, yeah.
And one of the big findings is that, well, as the original number of species in a province, what we call species richness,
yeah,
as that increased, the rate of new colonizations actually went down.
So it's like the more crowded the butterfly party, the harder it is for new species to crash
in. Exactly. It's like musical chairs, right?
Yeah.
You run out of chairs.
Makes sense. I guess it's all about competition, right?
You got it. Competition for food, for space, all the good stuff butterflies need.
So like trying to find a seat on a crowded bus, the more passengers already there, the tougher it is to squeeze in.
Perfect analogy. So this ecological filtering, it's acting like a gatekeeper, right?
Yeah, I'm starting to see that.
Shaping which species can join the community.
Okay, so tell me about these newcomers, these species that are managing to get past the gatekeeper.
Right.
Are they just like carbon copies of the butterflies already there? Or are they bringing something new to the table?
That's what makes this so cool. These new arrivals, they actually had a greater variety of traits compared to those original communities.
Really? So they're adding to the diversity, not just the numbers.
Exactly. It's like they're bringing new skills to the ecosystem.
I like that. So different traits might help them use resources or habitats in a different way, right?
Right. Like maybe they can tolerate slightly different temperatures, or they eat different plants, or maybe they're even active at different times of day.
So they're finding their own niche, even with all that competition.
You got it. And then there's this whole other layer of complexity, this latitudinal trend in trait variability.
Okay, the article mentioned that, but I got to be honest, it went over my head a bit. Break it down for me.
Sure. So latitude, that's just, you know, how far north or south you are from the equator.
Gotcha.
And what they found is that in those original butterfly communities, the variety of traits actually increased the further north you went.
Really? So up near the Arctic, those communities started out with a wider range of traits than down south.
That's what the data shows.
But wouldn't you think those warmer, more stable southern environments would have more diversity?
You'd think so, right? But think about it this way. Up north, those environments, they're pretty tough, right?
Yeah. Cold, short growing seasons, unpredictable weather.
So only the toughest butterflies, those with a wider range of traits, could really handle those conditions.
They're like the extreme athletes of the butterfly world.
Exactly. So they were already pretty diverse. And then you add climate change on top of that, warmer temperatures, landscape shifting, and now you've got even more new species moving in.
Wow. Like we're watching this real-time ecological experiment unfold.
Right. And it's hard to predict exactly what will happen next, but the research gives us some clues.
Okay, spill the tea. What might these butterfly communities look like in the future?
Well, one possibility is that, you know, this trend of increasing diversity keeps going as long as there's enough habitat and resources.
So even more butterflies up north?
Maybe. We could see some really unique and specialized butterflies making their way north as those temperatures climb.
That would be amazing.
But there might be a limit, you know, a carrying capacity, a point where the ecosystem just can't handle any more diversity.
So it's a balancing act between these new arrivals and the butterflies already there.
Exactly. And all these factors, the climate, the land use, the species traits, they're all playing a role in that balancing act.
And if things get out of whack, that's when we might see some species decline or even disappear.
Possibly, yeah. Like if warming happens too fast, some butterflies might not be able to adapt, even if they're pretty flexible.
Or if those habitats keep shrinking because of urbanization, even the toughest butterflies might struggle.
Exactly. So it's a race against time, right? Can these butterflies adapt and diversify quickly enough to keep up with all these changes?
I'm on the edge of my seat. So what can we do? How do we help them win this race?
That's the million-dollar question. And this research gives us some important pieces of the puzzle. We got to understand how these communities work, how they respond to these pressures, and then we can use that knowledge to make better decisions about how we manage our landscapes.
So it's not just about protecting individual butterflies. Mm-hmm. It's about protecting the whole community and the processes that keep it healthy.
Exactly. We need to think about the big picture, the interconnectedness of it all.
It's pretty humbling, isn't it? Realizing how much we impact these ecosystems, even without meaning to.
It is, but it's also empowering, you know? Because it means we can actually make a difference.
Okay, so we've talked about climate change, land use, these amazing butterfly adaptations. But the article also mentioned something called temperature movement. Can you break that down for us? What does it mean and how's it playing out in Northern Europe?
Sure. Imagine like drawing a line on a map showing the northern edge of where a butterfly species can comfortably live, right?
Okay, like the limit of their territory.
Right. As temperatures warm up, that line is going to shift northward.
So the butterflies are basically chasing their ideal climate zone as it moves north.
That's a great way to put it. And the researchers are tracking how fast that line is moving.
And they found it's moving faster in Northern Europe than in other places.
Way faster. But remember, those butterfly range shifts aren't always matching up perfectly with that temperature movement.
Right. We talked about how some species are racing ahead, mm-hmm. some lagging behind, some even moving in the opposite direction.
Yep. And that's because temperature is just one piece of the puzzle, you know? Other climate factors are changing too, like rainfall patterns, humidity, even the timing of the seasons.
Right. It's like moving to a new city. You consider more than just the temperature.
Exactly. You want the right vibe, the right lifestyle. Butterflies are looking for their ideal ecological neighborhood.
They're picky about their real estate.
They are. And just like people might choose a city that's not the warmest but has other perks, butterflies might prioritize different factors, not just temperature.
So it's about finding the best overall fit for their needs, not just following the heat.
Exactly. And speaking of things not being so straightforward, the research also found something interesting about the rate of butterfly range expansion itself.
Ooh, yeah. That was a head scratcher for me. It wasn't as simple as I thought it would be.
It wasn't. They found that the fastest range expansions actually happened at intermediate rates of temperature increase.
So not the fastest warming, but not the slowest either.
Mm.
It's weird.
It is. You'd think those super fast warming rates would mean butterflies could spread even quicker.
Right, like follow the heat wave.
Exactly. But nature doesn't always play by our rules.
Clearly. So what's going on there? Why wouldn't those super fast warming rates lead to super fast expansion?
Well, it might be that at those really high rates of change, things are just happening too fast for the butterflies to keep up, even those adaptable ones.
So they can only handle so much change at once.
It seems that way. They might not be able to find the right plants for their caterpillars. Their life cycles might get thrown off. Or maybe they face even more competition from other species that are also on the move.
It's like they're trying to outrun a wildfire, but the fire keeps getting bigger and faster.
Right. There are limits to adaptability, even for those incredible butterflies.
That's a good reality check.
Yeah.
So it's not just about how much the climate changes, but how fast those changes happen.
Exactly. And that's one of the key takeaways from this research.
It really makes you think about the complexity of it all.
It does, and it highlights how important it is to understand these relationships between climate change and, well, the whole web of life.
Okay, so climate change is a big factor, but it's not acting alone.
Nope.
Let's bring back those land use changes, especially those expanding forests.
Yeah.
You mentioned that forest cover has actually been increasing in Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remind us why that is?
Well, it's a bunch of things, really. Mm-hmm. Changes in forestry practices, government policies, even societal shifts.
Yeah.
Like in a lot of Northern Europe, there's been this move away from traditional agriculture towards more forestry.
So fewer farms, more forests. It's interesting how those big societal shifts can have such a huge impact on the environment.
It really is. And it's not just the amount of forest, but the types of forests and how they're managed.
Right. Like some butterflies might like those older, more diverse forests, while others prefer younger, more open ones.
Exactly. Different strokes for different butterflies.
Exactly. But what about those butterflies that aren't so fond of trees? What's happening to those grassland specialists as those forests keep expanding?
That's the tough part, right? As one habitat expands, another often shrinks.
It's like an ecological seesaw, some species up, some down.
That's a great way to put it. And it's a real challenge for conservation.
Yeah, how do you find that balance?
It's about managing those landscapes in a way that supports everyone. The forest lovers and the grassland lovers.
Easier said than done, I imagine.
Definitely. It takes planning, collaboration, and being willing to adapt as the climate keeps changing.
Okay, so we've talked about forests, grasslands, but what about the big one, urbanization? Are cities just bad news for butterflies, or is there any hope for them in those concrete jungles?
It's definitely a challenge. Cities are basically designed for humans, not butterflies.
Yeah, not exactly natural habitats.
Not really. Less space for those wildflowers and meadows butterflies need. Plus, cities tend to be hotter, which can be a real problem.
Right, they're like little heat islands.
Exactly. But it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom.
Oh. Is there a way to make cities more butterfly-friendly?
Definitely. It's all about creating those little pockets of habitat, planting native wildflowers, butterfly gardens, even designing green spaces that connect different parts of the city.
So it's like building oases in that concrete jungle.
Exactly. And those oases, they're not just good for butterflies.
Right. They're good for people too, right?
Yeah. They give people a chance to connect with nature, appreciate biodiversity.
I love that. Even in those busy cities, there's still room for nature.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've covered so much ground. Climate change, land use, those amazing butterflies, and how they're adapting.
It's been quite a journey.
But there's one more piece of the puzzle we need to explore. Those community shifts.
Right.
What do these changes mean for the whole ecosystem?
That's where we'll really see how the composition of these butterfly communities is changing and what that means for the future of biodiversity in Northern Europe.
All right, so we've seen how climate change and land use are kind of shaking things up in Northern Europe.
Yeah.
And those butterflies are adapting, but some are doing better than others.
Definitely.
Now, let's talk about those community shifts.
Okay.
What's actually happening out there? Which butterflies are thriving in these new conditions? And which ones are, well, having a harder time?
Well, it seems like those generalists, the ones who can tolerate a variety of conditions, those guys are really having a moment.
They're rolling with the punches, huh?
Exactly. They're not picky eaters. They can handle different habitats. So they're the ones expanding their ranges the fastest, taking advantage of all these new opportunities.
Makes sense. But what about those specialists, the ones with more specific needs?
Yeah, they're facing a tougher time, that's for sure. It's not easy when your preferred habitat starts shrinking or your favorite food plant becomes harder to find.
So it's a tale of two butterflies, the generalists spreading their wings and the specialists struggling to keep up.
Kind of, yeah. But it's not just about the number of species. It's also about the roles they play in the ecosystem.
Okay, so how do those shifting roles impact the bigger picture?
Well, as the composition of the community changes, it can have these ripple effects on other organisms, you know, plants, birds, even the soil.
Wow, it's like a butterfly domino effect.
Exactly. Think about pollination, for instance. Butterflies are super important for that, but different species prefer different flowers. So if those specialist butterflies decline, the plants that depend on them might suffer too.
Ah, so it's not just about the butterflies themselves, it's about the whole web of life.
Exactly. And then you've got those birds and bats that rely on butterflies for food. If those butterfly populations change, it can impact them too.
It's all connected, isn't it?
It really is. It's like a delicate dance, and every partner needs the others to keep things in balance.
So how do we make sure that dance continues? How do we keep these communities healthy and thriving?
That's the big question, and there's no easy answer, unfortunately. We need to understand how all these factors, the climate, the landscape, the species themselves, how they all interact and influence each other.
So it's about understanding those connections, those relationships.
Exactly. And then we can use that knowledge to inform our conservation efforts.
So it's not just about protecting individual butterflies, it's about protecting the whole community, the whole system.
Precisely. It's about recognizing that nature is this incredibly complex web of interconnected relationships and that our actions have consequences.
It's a lot to think about.
It is, but it's also pretty inspiring,
Oh.
because it means we can actually make a difference.
That's a good point. We're not just powerless bystanders in this whole process. We
Mm.
can actually help shape a more butterfly-friendly future.
Exactly. And with research like this to guide us, we can make smarter choices about how we manage our landscapes, protect those precious habitats, and create a world where both butterflies and humans can thrive.
Well said. I think that's a perfect place to wrap things up. We've learned so much about these amazing butterfly communities in Northern Europe,
You have.
their resilience, the challenges they're facing, the intricate dance of life that connects them all.
It's been fascinating.
And we hope it's inspired you to appreciate the beauty and complexity of the natural world. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this research. What surprised you? What questions are you still pondering? Share your insights with us in the comments. And until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep diving deep.
See you on the next deep dive.